was around 130 AD, some unknown fella put quill to papyrus and wrote a letter to Diognetus. Again, some unknown bloke. Yet this letter has survived the annals of time. And in this letter, the writer spoke of an unusual bunch of people called Christians. And he said this: Christians are distinguished from other men neither by country nor language nor the customs which they observe, but inhabiting Greek as well as barbarian cities, they share in all things with others and yet endure all things as if foreigners. They marry and have children, but they do not destroy their offspring. They have a common table, but not a common bed. They are in the flesh, but they do not live after the flesh. They obey all of the prescribed laws and at the same time surpass the laws by their lives. They love all people, and yet they are persecuted by all. They are unknown and condemned. They are poor, yet make many rich. They are in lack of all things, and yet abound in all. They are dishonoured. They are evil spoken of. They are reviled. They are insulted, and yet they bless and they repay the insult with honour. They do good, yet are punished as evildoers. They are assailed by the Jews as foreigners and are persecuted by the Greeks. Yet those who hate them are unable to assign any reason for their hatred. An amazing description of the first century Christians. First and century Christians stood apart from their world. They were living counterculturally. They influenced their neighbours by their lives for the better. Their example and their reputation went before them. Again, they were living counterculturally. As King Solomon wrote, "A good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better, much better than silver or gold." Is your home, is your place of employment, is your school, is your community influenced for the better by how you live your life? Do people see you as someone who has set a good example to follow? Do they see a correlation between the way that you live your life and what you profess? Jesus suggests that our relationship with him should impact our world for the better. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, then how can it be made salty again? It's no longer any good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men." So as the salt of the world, make sure that you don't lose your effectiveness by being polluted by the sin and the philosophies of the world. Don't let sin or the philosophies of the world make you ineffective. Take your saltiness away. And we know that salt does a number of things. Adds taste to food. It melts ice, creates thirst, and it's a preservative. And this was salt's major function in Jesus' day, as no one had a fridge. No one had an ice box. And so meat and fish were packed in salt to preserve them. So when Jesus says that we are the salt of the earth, then clearly he acknowledges that left to its own devices, if you leave the world to itself, then it will soon decay and rot. We are meant to preserve the truth and hold to God's values in our world. To do this, we cannot stay in the salt shaker. We have to be in our world. We have to be being Christ in our world. Ask ourselves the questions, do I look like Christ where God has placed me? Do I add flavour? Do I create a thirst in people that they long for God? Jesus also declared that we have influence and impact in our world as we are the light of the world. You are the light. And I hope you understand that darkness can never dismiss or crowd out light. Darkness cannot push into light, but it's always the other way around. Light pushes into the darkness, and light illuminates the potential of danger. Light makes things safe. Christians, therefore, light up the pathway to God and push back on the darkness of our world. This is why Jesus says, you light a lamp, you stick it on a lampstand so everybody in the house can see. Our good deeds then are the light to those around about us. They reveal the love of God to our world. What good deeds can you do? Stop and think for a moment about your neighbours, your classmates, your workmates, random people who that you might come across who you actually realise they do need a helping hand. What good deeds can you do? Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Other ways that we can preserve God's reputation and shine the light of his goodness to us all is through the last four Beatitudes. Because these relate to how we relate to one another. And we can therefore be salt and light in our world. So Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall be shown mercy. Blessed are those who are merciful. And to those who were sitting in the crowd listening to Jesus, this would have been radical teaching. Because the Roman Empire within which they lived did not value mercy whatsoever. They valued justice, courage, self-control, and wisdom, not mercy. In fact, philosophers of the time called mercy a disease of the soul. Something to be abhorred and ashamed of if you expected to be successful in life. Then you don't show mercy. Slaves were treated like pieces of used furniture, and the position of women and children was far from ideal. If a woman gave birth to a daughter or a sickly son, the father had the right of rejecting that child, putting it out to the elements, and letting it die. A temperamental master, in a fit of rage, could maim or even kill a slave. An enemy was an enemy, and the best enemy was a dead enemy. The Roman Empire was very much about domination. Show no mercy. Imagine the emperor in the Colosseum. Still today around our world, many people have little time for mercy. Yet, this is the one virtue that impresses everyone the most. Deeds of mercy to the hurting and undeserving. Many who have been awarded world prizes have shown great mercy. The greatest example of mercy is found in Jesus Christ at the cross. Through his death, Jesus mercifully died so that we could be forgiven and receive grace. Our Father in heaven is a God of mercy. Great mercy. He doesn't give us what we deserve. He doesn't leave us to our own fate. We don't deserve forgiveness, but rather punishment for our sins and left to wallow in the consequences of our own sin. But no, God doesn't leave us there. But he lifts us up out of the mire and into his glorious presence, forgiving us, showing us mercy. And Jesus says that we are truly blessed as we too extend mercy to one another. Mercy is countercultural, and we extend mercy because we have received mercy. Do you know someone who has a special needs child? Maybe you could volunteer to babysit once in a while, or maybe give them a voucher to a restaurant whereby they can go out and enjoy the night together and whilst you babysit their child. Do you know a person who has severe health problems? Send them a card. Let them know that you're praying for them today. Do you know someone who's having marriage difficulty or trouble with a teenager? Give them a phone call. Tell them that you're praying for them. Is there somebody who has wronged you? Don't demand justice. Instead, be merciful. Forgive them and be kind to them. How salty is that? Jesus then says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." King Solomon, he wrote, "Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life." Guard your heart. It's the wellspring of life. Jesus also understood that the heart was the most deceitful above all. He said that from out of the heart comes evil thoughts and murder and adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. So your heart can be the wellspring of life, but it can also be the most deceitful. What's in your heart is what people see. Is your heart a wellspring of life, love, encouragement, and joy? Or is it where people see anger and jealousy, foul language, disunity, grumbling and complaining, lies and slander? Jesus suggests that we can have purity of heart, and those who do will see God. Purity means to be clean and undivided, where sincerity and integrity reside, honesty and faithfulness, support and encouragement. It doesn't matter how much you talk about your faith or how many people you might invite to church. If others see inconsistency and impurity, then the salt has lost its saltiness. The light is all but a flicker. We ought always examine our heart, our motives. Why do we do what we do? I encourage you to ask yourself these questions. Why do I do what I do? Why do I react the way that I do? Why do I say what I say? We are salt and light when we have purity of heart and seek to be people of peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God, sons and daughters. Most people don't like conflict, and most people seek to avoid it. But a peacemaker is respected by everyone. Their light shines in the darkness because they seek to preserve life and goodness. Jesus, the perfect Son of God, was called the Prince of Peace, as he was the one who brought reconciliation between sinful humanity and our holy God. The Prince of Peace, brought reconciliation, the peacemaker. Peacemakers seek reconciliation between estranged parties. They seek to calm troubled waters, and often they're the ones to absorb the hurt and make the sacrifice themselves to maintain a positive relationship. Peacemakers are often an easy target because they don't tend to respond to false accusations and lies, but rather they endeavour to leave judgment and justice in God's hands. And we're called to be peacemakers. And as such, we'll be children of God. We will reflect God. We'll be just like him. When we take up the role of a peacemaker, it's not just God who says, "This is one of my children." The world also notices. The world takes notice. This is a child of God. And lastly, Jesus said, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And Jesus goes on to elaborate more on that. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." We would assume that living in such an advanced and mature society, a society which where tolerance is highly valued, we would expect that we shouldn't be ridiculed. However, sometimes when we try to be salt and light, you can be the victim of intense opposition. The Aussie culture too has a tendency of knocking down the tall poppy. And although we don't set out to, sometimes when you're merciful, pure-hearted, peaceful, your standards and your lifestyle may convict others regarding their failures and they may attack you, seeking to knock down, you down, to their standards. Jesus was not immune to this. He was perfect, and yet they crucified him. And if we seek to follow him, then we should anticipate some opposition. Because although the way that we live is so appreciated by the world, it's also so countercultural that therefore we are an affront to people as they realise their own shortcomings. Sometimes the way that we live is like pouring hot coals on the head. So when persecution, ridicule, and insult come your way, consider yourself blessed, for great is your reward in heaven. If you're not invited to the get-together because you don't party hard enough or fit into their crowd, don't mope because you're unpopular. Rejoice and be glad. If you're criticised as intolerant and ignorant because you stand for biblical truth, don't be wounded in your ego. Don't set out to retaliate and get even with sarcasm. Rejoice and be glad. They've noticed. If you lose a bid in business because your estimates are honest and you don't play deceptive games, don't bemoan the fact that others are richer. Again, rejoice and be glad. And if you're single because you have kept high moral standards and others have otherwise played the pack and are now married, don't be resentful. God knows the purity of your heart. Rejoice and be glad. For great is your reward in heaven. The Beatitudes help to shift our focus from the temporal to the eternal. Our example and reputation are both very important because They should reflect Jesus. We are to be salt and light as persecuted peacemakers, extending mercy, seeking purity of heart. We are blessed not because of anything that we have done, but because of who God is and how he's living his life through us. As those poor in spirit who mourn over sin, hungering after righteousness and allowing Jesus to control our lives, then we appreciate that we are chosen, not forsaken, because God is for us, not against us. Great will be our reward in heaven. Great will be your reward in heaven. And so with these Beatitudes in mind, I just want to encourage us to take a moment. There's going to be a song that will play, and the words will be up there for you to follow through. But just take a moment to reflect on the blessings of God and how he has called us to be salt and light. Let's take a moment in reflection.